You're listening to the Cycling Podcast.
Hello, and joining you today, September 27th, 2023. That is 10 years exactly from the day when the controversial Lance Armstrong tweeted a single word, hallelujah, in response to what I'm going to ask my co-host guest in just a second. My name is Daniel Freeber, and I am one of the hosts of this episode of the Cycling Podcast. In fact, I'm going to cut short this intro right there and immediately put that start of a 10 to my co-host, the voice of cycling from Blackburn via the Balearics, Rob Hatch, lest he be tempted to Google the answer to that question. Rob, in answer to what did Lance Armstrong tweet hallelujah on September the 27th, 2013?
That he'd be looking in this direction about 10 kilometres down the coast from where I'm sat now and saying, wow, the home of cycling's over there. That's Daniel Freeburn,
well,
Rob Hatch.
We should preface this. We should explain this. Lance Armstrong is on his annual jaunt to Mallorca, isn't he?
With
The We Do annual holiday to Mallorca with Jan Ullrich and Johan Bruneel, among other people. And they did post an Instagram story a couple of days ago, didn't they, Rob, where they were starting the Col d'Honneur climb that a lot of listeners will be familiar with. And they were sort of sweeping past our old front door in Bunyola, weren't they?
They certainly were. I'm surprised none of them stopped to give us a knock, to be honest.
No homage from the controversial Lance Armstrong. But, Rob, answer the question, please. What do you think he was tweeting that about? Hallelujah. In 2013, he was not impersonating Jeff Buckley on Stars in Their Eyes. Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be Jeff Buckley. Was not 2013. He was not exclaiming hallelujah in response to the cycling podcast launching, which it did in 2013. Wasn't in response to a British player finally winning Wimbledon. But that also happened in 2013. Wasn't the birth of Prince George, firstborn of William and Catherine, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge? What was it?
I think I'm stumped. Absolutely stumped.
It was Brian Cookson succeeding Pat McQuaid at the helm of the UCI.
Oh dear.
Seemed like a size fellow Lancastrian.
What did he think was going to happen?
Well, it seemed like a bit of a seismic shift for the sport at the time. Whether it turned out to be that is a matter of opinion, Rob. Over the last few days, we've perhaps seen the outline of another seismic shift in the sport with the Dutch outlet Veleflits, the first to report the respective bosses of Jumbo-Visma and Sudal Quickstep, that is Richard Plugger and Patrick Lefebvre, working on a merger or a fusion. Do you use that word in English, fusion, for two companies? I don't think you do you? It's a merger.
Cuisine, isn't it, really?
Yeah. That topic, that bombshell, is going to be the main topic, in fact, of today's podcast. First, I should say that Lionel Burney, my usual co-pilot, was due to join us today. He had to abort due to unforeseen circumstances at the last minute. Nothing for the listeners to worry about, nothing too serious. No need to send flowers and grapes to Lionel's bedside. Just a bit of a technical hitch this morning. So, Rob, it's just you and I in the hot seat this morning, the hot seats, the super caliente seats this morning. We're going to get on to the Jumbo-Visma fusion with Sudal Quickstep that's gathering steam, a story that's gathering steam, and we'll hear a lot more about that later on in the episode. But first, we're going to have a restyle, slightly reconfigured, slightly abridged news roundup this week, Rob. I'm going to endeavour to rattle through it.
Shall I put the stopwatch on?
Yes. We're going to start, Rob, with a very bitter, but also, I suppose, in some ways, very sweet news item also involving Jumbo-Visma. It is Nathan van Hooijdonk having to abruptly end his professional career at the age of 27, having fallen unconscious at the wheel of his car in Belgium a couple of weeks ago. Subsequent tests have revealed that van Hooijdonk had a heart muscle anomaly or has a heart muscle anomaly requiring that he be fitted with an internal defibrillator. So that part is very bitter, obviously. Van Hooijdonk, of course, was part of Jonas Vingegaard's winning Tour de France team just a few weeks ago. But there has been some balm, some levity in recent days with the news that Van Hooijdonk has become a father for the first time of a baby boy named Alessio. And Rob, we're trying to be brief, but this is very sad news. And comes at a time. Well, it came. I was there at the Vuelta a España, of course, on the morning when Nathan van Hooydonk had his accident. And this sort of punctured the mood at the time, the mood of a team that was converging on history being made. And that historic achievement, they finally did realise just a couple of days later with the clean sweep of the Vuelta podium and the clean sweep of the Grand Tours.
Yeah. I mean, there's great news in that he's come home. He's well. That's the most important thing. And of course, congratulations to him and his young, expanding family on the arrival of Alessio. But of course, I mean, contrasting emotions, difficult emotions. And I can't even imagine the sort of mix of things he's feeling at the minute. So all the best to Nata for Hooydonk. And thankfully, in terms of his health, all's well that ends well for now.
Just before we move on, Rob, incidentally, another rider, this has garnered slightly less attention, but the Cofidis rider, Wesley Kreider, Dutch rider, he is recovering from suffering cardiac arrest in August. I believe, well, he's back on his bike, isn't he? And he will, it seems as though he will be able to resume his career, which is certainly good news for him. But these are always, well, they're alarming developments when they do happen. And, you know, of course, last year we saw Sonny Colbrelli, his cardiac arrest that he suffered at the Volta a Catalunya. And he's another one who's been forced to curtail his professional career. He tweeted his support to, not tweeted, he posted, I think, on Instagram at length about how difficult this is going to be for Van Hooydonk, and, well, certainly offered his solidarity, his support. Rob, racing news. Last week we had the European Championships. The men's TT was won rather sensationally by a British teenager, Josh Tarling, with Stefan Bissegger taking silver and Wout van Aert bronze, proceeding somewhat overshadowed by Stefan Kung's pretty grisly crash in some barriers in the closing kilometres. Another Swiss rider, Marlon Reusser, won the women's TT gold with Anna Henderson second and Christina Schweinberger third. Then in the road races, it was Christophe Laporte taking the men's gold ahead of his two Jumbo-Visma trade teammates, Van Aert and Coy. And Misha Predevold triumphing in the women's race ahead of countrywoman Lorena Wiebes and Lotta Kopecky. The next most important race of the weekend, Rob, I would say, was the Tour of Luxembourg, and you happened to be commentating. Do you remember what happened, and can you tell us, Rob, please?
Yeah, 5 stages around Luxembourg, victories for Corbin Strong and Jente Biedermans into pretty regulation stages, conservatively ridden stages, strange for this modern era of cycling. But then Ben Healy did a Ben Healy on the Wednesday, won the big difficult stage to Vianden Kassel and took the yellow jersey, but he'd lose it the day after, giving it away in the time trial to Mark Hirschi. Victor Campenaerts would win that time trial, his first time trial win for, I think, 4 seasons, which is quite a long time for him. Now he's been concentrating on other things, from breakaways and what have you, and hour records. And then the final stage was won by the Norwegian Tobias Haaland Johannessen. And Mark Hirschi held on to the yellow jersey to win just his second ever GC stage race.
Rob, can I ask you a question about Campenaerts? I was a little bit off the radar last week, certainly as far as the Tour of Luxembourg was concerned. Did he say anything in response to that win to the effect that he has decided to refocus on time trials?
Not particularly. He'd focused on this one, maybe because he knew that it was the time of year he could afford to do that. He'd had some pretty nasty personal news as well. He lost an uncle during the week, but so that was sort of the emotional push for him to go out and really give everything for the win. But he had been working on time trialing for this specific stage for quite a while, probably because I think he knew that the field was going to suit him as well.
A couple more races to fill you in on as the road season continues to wind down. Paris-Chauny was won by Jasper Philipsen at the weekend. That was his 14th victory of the season. And this week, there are another couple of fairly noteworthy stage races. They're underway in Croatia and Malaysia. The Crow Race and the Tour of Langkawi, respectively. We've seen early wins for Elia Viviani in Croatia. And in Langkawi, Arvid Deklein, Gleb Siritsa, George Jackson, Daniel Barbour, and Simon Carr. Simon Carr winning, I think it's the sort of queen stage in Langkawi in the last few hours. Just finally, Rob, amid the maelstrom of merger talk, some other speculation about transfers, and GCN have reported that Luke Plapp could leave Ineos Grenadiers for Jaco Alula a year before the end of his contract. Plapp is still just 22. He's had a pretty unhappy season after a promising start with a second place on GC in the UAE Tour back in February. Surprised, I'm slightly surprised, not surprised by this as well, Rob, because he has had a pretty opaque year. I think he's had some physical problems throughout the summer. And yeah, it looks as though he would like a sort of new start at Jaco Alula.
And a team as an Australian with a young Australian talent where he knows he's going to get the full support as well. And, you know, we've talked about this many times, haven't we, with Ineos before Sky had down the years. It's not easy. It's almost impossible to support all the talents that they have. Jumbo-Visma, you know, a destination for many. Jaco Alula, where he's going, you know, they'll put their weight behind him. And if he is going to, I guess, trying to achieve what I assume he wants to achieve, it's probably the best place for it to take that next step.
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Incogni. Incogni is from NordVPN. Now, NordVPN keeps all of your data safe and secure when you're browsing the internet. Incogni has a slightly different function, and it's to look after your data and make sure that you're not the victim of a data breach. And they do that by requesting that your data be removed from company databases on your behalf. Now, companies store people's information for all sorts of reasons, but you may not want it to be stored and then sold on to other companies, and Incogni can help you with just a few easy clicks of the mouse. If you wanted to do this by yourself, it would basically be a never-ending task. You'd have to be contacting.
Well, Rob, before the break, that was the news roundup. That was the new relatively brief, concise, I hope, news roundup. How did we do?
I think all right. You set the early time.
Bit shorter than usual. Rob, one of the reasons to have a shorter news roundup this week was to devote more time to the main issue of the week, the main news story, one of the biggest news stories I can remember in recent memory. It broke, Rob, on Sunday night. And, well, it was broken by a Dutch outlet, Dutch website, Wheeler Flits. And it was, I can tell you exactly when it was. It was 29 minutes past six on Sunday night, that's Central European time. They published a story. The headline in English was Jumbo-Visma working on a merger with Soudal Quickstep. Story was written by Raymond Kerkhoffs, whose credentials, I can tell you, having worked alongside Raymond for many years in press rooms, his credentials are impeccable. I think Raymond did his first Tour de France when he was 16 years old. I did mine when I was 20, but yeah, Raymond I think has the prize for the youngest ever Tour de France journalist. But Rob, what a story. And you'll hear me a minute talking to Raymond and referring to other bombshells of this nature, and I was casting back, searching, sort of rummaging around in my memory for stories of a similar magnitude, similar shock value. The best I could come up with was the announcement by the controversial Lance Armstrong that he was returning to racing in 2008. Can you think of any?
No, I was sat on my sofa on Sunday evening after finishing Tour of Luxembourg, just watching the football, actually. And, you know, the messages start to come in, don't you? And I'm glad you mentioned Raymond's name there, because had it not been somebody with his reputation who'd penned this, I'd have probably put the phone straight down and thought, oh, that's a load of rubbish, just because these are two huge teams who've been big rivals, and I would not have believed it otherwise. Yes, we've had mergers before. With respect to those mergers, they didn't come out of the blue like this. They aren't going to be big rivals like this. And in terms of general cycling story, aside from, you know, so-and-so's won this and what a result it was for this, or that's a sad story because something's happened, in terms of just unexpected out of nowhere, this is right up there for me.
It did come completely out of nowhere, although one of the curious things about this story is that we have had a sort of background noise, mood music over the last few weeks of mergers, of a merger, multiple mergers possibly coming to fruition. But the rumours did not center on these two teams. The main rumor, in fact, well, it has been to do with Ineos Grenadiers. And Ineos Grenadiers, Sudal Quickstep, Ineos Grenadiers and Movistar. That's been mooted as well. Rob, I'm just going to read the first paragraph of the story and then we're going to hear from the journalist himself who broke the story, Raymond Kirkos. The first paragraph of the story reads as follows. It is the biggest secret in cycling that has unfolded in recent months. As early as mid-July, Jumbo-Visma and Sudal Quickstep have been in talks to form a merger by 2024, or to merge. Several sources confirm this to Wheeler Flitz. Richard Plugger, he is the current Jumbo-Visma managing director, I think his title is. He will become the team CEO. Marijn Zeeman will become head coach. Patrick Lefebvre will become a member of the team supervisory board. According to insiders, it is only a matter of time before this spectacular and surprising merger is finalised. That was Sunday. We're now midway through the week. It's Wednesday. We've heard nothing really, Rob, to dissuade us, to make us think that this was incorrect reporting, that it was based on thin gruel. If anything, a bit more meat has been added to this rumour, to this story over the last couple of days. I haven't seen anyone that's really ruling this out outright. Patrick Lefebvre has sort of given a no comment, a knowing no comment. Jumbo-Visma aren't commenting on it publicly, which in itself is quite telling. Yeah. So, Rob,
because they seem to be one of the teams who react to almost everything PR-wise. That statement from Jumbo-Visma for me told me quite a lot. That's when I started to believe it as well. Adding the reputation of the journalist to the tone of that no comment, started to think, oh, hang on a minute, you know, this could be happening.
So, Rob, before we, well, I mentioned meat on the bone, before we throw the meat on the barbecue ourselves, shall we hear from Raymond Kirkos, as I said, the journalist who broke the story, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about how he came to know about this mooted merger and, well, how it might play out. So here's Raymond in conversation with me yesterday on Tuesday.
It started a few weeks ago when I saw a story in Het Laatste Nieuws, a Belgian newspaper. They had a rumor that Richard Plugger was a candidate to become GM, the new GM of Sudal Quickstep. And it was just a phrase in a story, but I started to think, how can this be true? And then I start to phone with some people. In the last days of the Vuelta, Richard Plugger, he also gave an interview to other Belgian media, and he said he really wanted to work with Remco Evenepoel. Then I really started directly questions to some people, and I had some contacts with wider agents, and then it started the rumor that there was really going on something between Jumbo and Sudal Quickstep, and I found somebody who wanted to talk about it.
That's interesting, because those sort of murmurs that you heard, the first one, Plugger being linked to the position at Sudal Quickstep, they didn't really get much airplay beyond the Dutch-speaking media. No one really picked up on those. Already back then, I guess it would have sounded quite strange to some people. You know, they would see Jumbo-Visma as the big fish in this, and Sudal Quickstep being a team that, okay, has had, you know, it's got this great heritage and amazing results, but we've had this sort of constant over the last few years, this constant background noise of Lefebvre sort of pleading poverty and saying that his team, you know, needs more financial backing. So they would have almost the other way around would have made more sense.
Yeah, but I think that it really sounded really strange, and I think therefore nobody had attention for it. Mm. And I think everybody still was believing what is going on between Ineos and Sudal Quickstep, because you see that the squad of Ineos still has 19 riders, I believe, at this moment. The dance around Remco Evenepoel is still going on. So I think everybody was focused on a merger, and that way, if you saw to Jumbo-Visma, they had 27 riders, doesn't sound sound logical. And even now, when they, when everybody has their sources and knows that this is going on, that they are really in, talking on a serious way, and it's really an option for both of the teams to go together, it still sounds really strange.
Raymond, from your point of view, and I guess this is the question that everyone's asking, what are the respective motivations? Before you start, I'll just say what, on the face of it, what would seem to me the most obvious motivations, incentives. One is Patrick Lefebvre is, what was he, 67, 68? Again, he's made these noises going back over 3 or 4 years, even longer, about wanting to sort of take a step back. So you could well imagine that, if, you know, that's an option for him, and that's a motivation for him. And Jumbo's side, I can only really think of, well, the main thing I can think of is Soudal's contract with Lefebvre, which I believe, or with that team, which I believe expires in 2027. Someone told me yesterday that it's not worth as much as people might imagine, that it's worth sort of single figures of millions per year. Now, maybe if they joined up with Jumbo and they had Wout van Aert and others on their team, they would invest more. But those are the two main motivations as I see it. And it's quite difficult, especially on the Jumbo side, especially on Plugger and Jumbo's side, to understand what the main motivation here might be.
I think when you look to the first thing, it's a financial thing. It was, I think, around the Dwars de Vlaanderen in the week before the Tour of Flanders that we first heard that Jumbo is going to stop. Always said that they're going to pay also for the season 2024. But I saw 2 weeks ago when the ice skating team divorced with the cycling team, then the Jumbo Super Markets say that they are going to stay for 3 years, a founding partner of the Jumbo cycling team. In my option, this means that Jumbo doesn't pay the full amount for 2024 to the cycling team, but is sharing that in the coming 3 years. And what we must forget is that Jumbo brought in a lot of partners of their supermarkets as co-sponsors in the team. And then I look to Heineken, Unilever, Campina, Gorillas, Hema. And I think when you count those amounts, then you are around 10 million euro. When Jumbo is not anymore the main sponsor of the team, I don't see why all those partners should stay as a co-sponsor at the cycling team. So I think they really need money already for 2024. In March, they were really, really sure that they would find in a few months a new sponsor. But that way to find a sponsor in cycling seems to be very difficult. That's really understatement. You see, it's incredible difficult to find companies who will pay 15 to 25 million euros for a cycling team. From the Middle East, there's coming more and more money in cycling, and that means that the wages of the top riders are becoming higher and higher, because I spoke with somebody from Jaico Alula, and they said that some of the people from Saudi Arabia came to visit the Tour de France in Paris, and the only thing they asked at Brent Copeland is, how much does it cost for us to win the Tour de France? I think it's a dance around 4 or 5 riders who can win the Tour de France, and those riders make the expenses for the teams who really want to go for the win in the Tour de France really, really high. In my opinion, we are just at the start. If you see what happens in soccer, how much money from the Middle East is going to the soccer, it's really a changement, and cycling is still very, very, very cheap for them.
Just lay out for us what you think, what you suspect is going to happen now in the next 3 or 4 months. Come January the 1st, maybe 2024, what's the situation going to look like with Soudal Quickstep, let's say with Remco Evenepoel, with Jumbo Visma?
I know that they are talking and that it's really serious, and that from both sides they really want that this is going to succeed. It's impossible to keep all those good riders. That's really clear. I think Primoz Roglic will be the first who will quit. We heard already rumors during the Vuelta a España that he talked with Movistar, that he talked with Bahrain. There's going to happen something, that I'm really sure. Then it's waiting what Remco Evenepoel is going to do. Maybe this is for him the possibility to leave the team without a fee and go to Ineos. I think that's also the thing. Ineos has waited for a couple of months. If you see that they only have, I believe, 19 riders at this moment under contract. They really, and I know that Jim Radcliffe really wants to have a rider who is a candidate to win the Tour de France. And Remco is one of the five who is possible, can do that. I think some riders, Julian Alaphilippe, can go to I think almost every French team, yeah. They want him. Then what's going to happen with the second World Tour license? I think that the Swiss team, Studer of Cool, 36.5, they are really interested in it. Also Israel. But how many riders can they also take over? So there are really a lot of questions, and I think there are really a lot of difficulties they still have to take. But if you look at to a person like Zdeněk Bakala, how many mergers did he do in his life? Eh?
Yeah.
And much, much bigger than bringing together two cycling teams.
Well, Roman, even Patrick Lefebvre is pretty experienced with cycling team mergers as well, in various different forms to various different extents, going back to the 90s. You know, he's been a part of 4 or 5.
Yeah, but we also see it with Liquid Gas and Garmin in the past. We saw it with Radio Shack and Leopard. It's nothing new in cycling. Eh? So everybody is now saying, "Ooh, this is really difficult." I don't believe it's so difficult. And if those people really want to happen this, I think the UCI also gonna help them. But what we are gonna see is, if we look 10 years ago, it was Patrick Lefebvre, it were all the old riders who were the bosses of the teams. But if you look now, it's Jim Radcliffe, it's Zdeněk Bakala, it's a Sheikh from UAE. Those are really playing the game. It's not Mauro Giannetti anymore, but it are the people one step higher. So I think cycling has become for them just like normal business, and they are not afraid for a merger like this.
So Rob, a lot, an awful lot there to conjure with. A lot that I didn't know, didn't realise about the story, and I don't think anyone who listened to that will be under the impression that Raymond doesn't know what he's talking about, hasn't sourced this impeccably, and well, you heard his confidence there. He believes this is going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. It's going to happen by the end of the year, in time for the 2024 season. And there have been a lot of questions about that. Is that even feasible for that to happen in such short order? Well, Raymond said there, the likes of Zdeněk Bakala are very used to getting the job done when it comes to things like mergers.
Well, first of all, little rewind, bit of laying ground rules, if you like, laying of the situation. And just to explain, I think, Daniel, why we were all pretty incredulous when we heard this news, you know, and struggling almost, not wanting to believe it. These are two massive teams, two of the very biggest in the world. In the last few seasons, they've been among the three teams, if you add UAE in there, with the most wins. If you rewind a little, there was a period where maybe Ineos were in there as well before UAE came up with Pogacar. But they've always been up there since they had this reboot in the mid part of the last decade. Have Jumbo-Visma. Lefebvre's team was the team with the most wins in pro cycling for what? A good part of the last decade? Even before that, they had maybe a few barren years, and you go back to the mid-noughties, they were winning classics again for left, right and centre for fun, weren't they? But these teams approach things in very, very different ways. You've got the ultra-modern approach of Jumbo-Visma, the more traditional Flemish approach of what is now Sudal Quickstep. Not that I haven't embraced technology, but you know, the way they speak to people, the image they give off. They don't particularly express much love for each other. They're big rivals.
Well, you say that, Rob. This is something that I'd kind of passed me by over the last few months, but Richard Plugger and Patrick Lefebvre have manifestly enjoyed a good relationship. They've done a number of interviews, joint interviews with the Belgian media, where they've sat down together, and it's been clear just reading back over the last couple of days, reading those interviews, they are two gentlemen that see eye to eye. This is a story that in the sort of pre-Tour de France fervor, a lot of people will not have picked up on or not have noticed. Richard Plugger is now at the head, do they call it the president of the AIGC? CCP.
Yes, he was in the news this week, wasn't he? They signed an agreement with the CPA.
Which is the Association of Professional Teams, effectively. And when he was named the head of this organisation, there was criticism and there was noises of discontent from a number of teams. In fact, in July, a number of teams wrote a letter of protest suggesting that he had a conflict of interest and, well, not least his job trying to win the Tour de France with Jumbo-Visma would distract him from the important business the AIJCP needed to take care of. Those teams were Jayco, Alula, Cofidis, DSM, Bora, Alpecin, Bahrain, Intermarché. And Movistar, a conspicuous defender of Richard Plugger in that little sort of storm in the teacup was Patrick Lefebvre. Patrick Lefebvre, who himself in the past has been at the head of the AIGCP. He's fulfilled that role in the past. And that was another thing that, well, with hindsight, it sort of reaffirms that personally, those two gentlemen are on good terms.
But then on the sporting side, when you're on the bike, you know, they've been big rivals, haven't they? Not always going for the same prizes, but ever so closer, you know, Soudal Quickstep have become more of a GC team, haven't they? Remco Evenepoel won their first big GC prize at a Grand Tour last year at the Vuelta. In the last few years, Jumbo-Visma have improved in the classics, which traditionally has been Soudal Quickstep's bread and butter, hasn't it? And they've been, with Wout van Aert, starting to take away some of their success. Let's face it, it's Real Madrid and Barcelona, if you like, isn't it? Man United and Man City, the Lakers and the Bulls on the basketball court, even Lancashire and Yorkshire cricket clubs. I mean, can you imagine any of those other big sports teams merging? I can't. And that's why this is such a big story. And until 48 hours ago, maybe, until I really sat down and had a think, and I couldn't see it happening. And I couldn't see it being a particularly good thing for the sport. I mean, that's all going to come out in the wash down the line. But I think it's certainly looking more and more likely. And it's amazing, actually, in the space of a few days, where we've come from collectively in our thoughts of maybe denial to listening to Raymond there. And everything suddenly, as you said then, looking back, things start to make sense, Daniel.
Rob, just another bit of background again, which might start to shift perspectives about how probable this is. You mentioned the incongruity of those, well, of two major forces in the sport joining forces. In cycling, it isn't as unusual as people may think. Just in the relatively recent past, Patrick Lefebvre himself has been involved in a number of mergers. You could call them mergers. In some cases, it's been more sort of inheriting the relics of a disappearing team. Go back to 1995. Lefebvre was an influential director sportif at the GB MG, or prior to that, he had been up to 1994 team, and they joined forces with MAPPE in 1995. He then left MAPPE a few years later. He set up a team called Domo, which merged with what had been TVM, and that coalition, if you like, became Domo Farm Fritz. That existed from 2001-2002. Then in 2002, MAPPE pulled out of the sport. The Italian chemical adhesive company pulled out of the sport, and Lefebvre sort of inherited a lot of that old structure, director sportifs, staff, and not least riders, to form what was Quickstep and is now essentially Soudal Quickstep all these years later, so 20 years later. Along the way, in the meantime, 2012, HTC, that team folded, in effect, Bob Stapleton's American-based team. Lefebvre also inherited a lot of that team, took on board the bike sponsor Specialized, who they retain to this day, a lot of staff who they retain to this day, also a number of riders, Tony Martin, Gerard Sielek, the Valitz brothers, Matt Brammeier, Bert Grabsch, František Rabon. And there have been other examples, Rob. Cannondale, Garmin, Cervelo, Test Team, and Garmin or Slipstream. Radio Shack, Leopard, our own Brian Nygaard was involved in a big high-profile merger. That was at the end of 2011.
And there's another one going on this winter as well. Jayco Alula and Live Racing on the women's side of the sport's happening as well. One thing I would say to all that, yes, it does happen. And I guess it's where it sheds cycling's economic model in pretty shows it in pretty much the bad light that I think, you know, we're still all searching for a solution to that, aren't we? Collectively scratching our heads as the years go by and, you know, we can't find one. What I will say, though, Daniel, is that nothing, I think, has happened in terms of mergers on the size of this one. This would be a massive step forward in terms of the degree of it, the importance. Well, step back, yes, obviously, if you look at it that sense, but in terms of, you know, trying to merge two giant entities. And like I said, you know, the reason I'm a reference to the other big sports teams around the world, because these are two absolute giants of recent years.
Rob, there, that's the sort of outline of this story, a bit of the historical context. After a short break, we will come back and we will discuss what some of the implications on the road might be, particularly regarding riders. And, well, what colours they'll be wearing, who they'll be representing in 2024.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast Team Car, the back of the pack, please.
The Cycling Podcast is partnered with MAP, and we're very proud to be partners with MAP because they're the creators of some of the finest cycling clothing, including the Cycling Podcast jersey and range of accessories. Now, MAP takes sustainability very seriously and have been working with Bluesign for a while now. But what is Bluesign? Here's MAP's product manager, Hamish Lowe, to explain.
So my name's Hamish, and I'm the product manager here at MAP at our HQ in Melbourne. My role is responsible for building MAP's product roadmap and guiding the process to bringing those products to life through the development journey and handing them over to the marketing and creative team. So Bluesign is effectively an organization that works closely with brands to understand their trajectory on their paths to a more sustainable future. And one of the key areas that Bluesign focuses on is chemical integrity. That really has a greater impact on areas such as water, energy, climate, environmental, and social impact as well. When we're talking about materials, chemistry generation creates a significant byproduct in the production process. And Bluesign are really focused on understanding that deeper supply network. And that really starts from the raw chemical stage of the chemical production companies and the process that those chemicals go through in order to actually get to a fabric mill that produces the materials. There's lots of stages throughout that process. It's super, super complex, and it's people probably have the perception that you have a fabric mill, everything, a raw material comes in, they do their finishing and everything's really straightforward. But there's lots of different stages and elements of contributors to building these materials. From Bluesign standpoint, they are an amazing organization that really help to support and consult us and guide us in terms of how we manage that supply network. Especially there's three key focuses that they're looking at. That's raw material suppliers, manufacturing facilities, and the safety or the social aspect within those facilities. So it's really looking at the bigger picture within the production of garments.
Go to map.cc to check out the full range of clothing that MAP have on offer for on and off the bike. And crucially for cycling, they have something for every weather condition. Especially important here in the UK as we finally bid farewell to summer and embrace the autumn. Won't be long before I'll be able to crack out the winter wardrobe of MAP clothing and wrap up warm for my winter rides. I've barely had any opportunity over the summer to wear my winter kit. Maybe just on one or two days have I gone out in the full warm clothing. It's been a bit of a patchy summer here in the UK, it has to be said. But MAP has something for every weather condition. And the kit looks great as well, none more so than the new range. The Race Cut System Pro Air jersey is definitely worth checking out. If you go to map.cc, you can see it in all its glory.
Well, Rob, needless to say, over the last 48 hours more, the phones have been red hot. They've been super caliente. Been speaking to a lot of people. You know, what's really striking me about this, one of the most surprising things about this, and this has been reported elsewhere as well, that a lot of the what you would think would be the main players, the main protagonists, the people who are going to be most affected by such a move, such a merger, were completely in the dark about this. I've heard some conflicting noises that maybe one or two of the Jumbo-Visma riders did know something at the end of the Vuelta a España. I spoke to someone earlier today, it was very close to a lot of the Jumbo-Visma riders, who heard about it first from someone at ASO on the last day of the Vuelta a España. And since then, so in the last, how long has it been since the end of the Vuelta? It's 10 days now. There's still not been too much other information that's filtered through to the Jumbo-Visma riders about what exactly is going to happen. I know Jonas Vingegaard's currently on holiday, but they are voraciously trying to read everything that's written, maybe listen to everything that's being said, in the hope that they will find out a bit more that way. And, you know, on the Sudal Quickstep side, who, you know, I suspect that they will be the more nervous group of riders, because Jumbo-Visma, let's face it, they're about to end a record-breaking season in which they've performed on every terrain, really. There isn't an area of their team which needs surgery in terms of riders and in terms of contracts expiring and places where they're going to be left short next year. You could point at the Ardennes Classics and say that they didn't have a great time there, but that's that's 1 week of the season. So I think the Sudal Quickstep riders will be more nervous, because if there is going to be bloodletting here, and we'll get onto this in a minute, and whether it will effectively shrink two teams into one and that will leave 20 odd riders jobless, one would think that more of the Sudal Quickstep riders will be in that position than on the Jumbo-Visma side. But they've been told, there was a leak of an internal memo that they'd been sent, the Sudal Quickstep riders, they've been told not to discuss the matter with the media. They've also been told that nothing is decided yet, nothing is set in stone, but discussions with a view to securing the financial future of that team, Sudal Quickstep, are definitely ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, finance is the backbone of this, isn't it, Daniel? Raymond was fantastically forensic on of that. Maybe this kind of a panic behind the scenes about getting the money for next season for Jumbo-Visma. We know already that Patrick Lefevre, he says every year that he needs more money. The rules of business sort of overrule things that happen on a sporting field. But as you say, on the sporting field, on the bike, as it were, you've only got space for 30 riders. And what do we have? A list of what, 50? I think that between them, there's around 50 teams, 50 riders.
50. I mean, there are other questions here that muddy the water slightly as well, to do with development teams and women's teams. The Quickstep have a development team. That's not owned by Patrick Lefevre or Zdeněk Bakala, the same ownership structure that owns the World Tour team. It's owned by Kevin Hulsmans, a former Quickstep rider. But there was a plan to absorb the women's team into the ownership structure at Quickstep, I believe. Jumbo-Visma, the women's team is owned by the same entity that owns the men's team, I believe. The same applies to their development team. There are other things to consider. For example, you know, there's a facility that Quickstep use in Leuven, the Bakala Academy, which was effectively built by the main shareholder of that team, Zdeněk Bakala, as a facility for the team. It's used for other things as well. It's used for studies at the University of Leuven and so on and so forth, I believe. But there's an awful lot to consider here, not just those 20 odd riders. There's also a huge amount of staff. I mean, this is one of the narratives as well we've heard over the last few years, of first Ineos and Sky outperforming other teams. One of the reasons they've been doing that is they've had more staff than other teams, and you see that when you're at races and you hear it, that they have more guys on the side of the road, guys and girls handing out bottles, than other teams. So it's a massive number of people that are involved.
It is. And to be honest, of course, naturally, as sports fans, we're going to talk about the riders and those we see on the screen. But, you know, I think it's only normal and natural that we should dedicate at least a thought for those who are going to be worried right now, are going to be sat at home thinking how they're going to pay the mortgage and how they're going to pay the bills next year. That is the primary human concern, I think. You know, I don't think there's any danger the likes of Jonas Vingegaard going back to work in the fish factory, is there? but, you know, there are going to be a lot of people, in all seriousness, you know, office staff, soigneurs, whatever it might be, who'd be worried that, well, you know, there's too many of my kind in one structure already, and there's going to be even less room for us if we have to move.
Again,
so that's where the
again, Rob, sorry to interrupt, but you would think, particularly on the coaching side, I mean, I can, you know, won't necessarily name individuals, I can kind of imagine, I've got rough guesses about the sort of coaches who might be appealing to Jumbo-Visma, but Jumbo-Visma, you're talking about a team that's working, that's functioning at a level that we've not seen before in professional cycling. It's hard to imagine that those will be the guys that will be edged out. Again, you would think there'd be more nervousness on the Sudal Quickstep side.
With certain results and recent results to go by, yes. Although I think Sudal Quickstep have had two or three very famous and good coaches, and you know, people have been talked about in the last couple of years. And it all depends on the riders as well. You know, that sort of thing will follow riders, because as we know, it's not quite the same sort of, you know, I have my set of people I will take to a team as it used to be. But, you know, there will be people who are Team Remco, you know, people who work with Kasper Asgreen, who's another of the leaders, Julien Alaphilippe. I know one of his riders is retiring this year, Dries Deveneijn. So that's, you know, somebody who won't be thought of too much. And the same in the other teams. You know, there'll be certain trainers, as they call them nowadays, coaches, sports directors, who get on better with the leaders in Jumbo-Visma as well. And a lot of it's going to come down to who controls, I think, at the top, which of the managers. You imagine that Ploeg is going to continue in his job, and maybe that would give the advantage with the results that Jumbo-Visma have to that, and you're looking more at Sudal Quickstep into, oh, hang on a minute, what's going to happen here?
Yeah, I think, well, we touched on it with Raymond, and a lot of people have touched on it over the last 3 or 4 years, and Patrick Lefebvre has said himself in numerous interviews, he's made noises even when they signed the Sudal sponsorship agreement. I said earlier that's going to expire at the end of 2027. Lefebvre said, I won't necessarily still be team boss at that point when this expires 2027. So he's made a lot of noises about wanting to withdraw slightly. I think Brian Holm, who's a former Sudal Quickstep direct sportif, gave an interview this week in which he said the same thing, that Patrick wants a smaller role. So in that sense, I think the fusion would be maybe a comfortable one and a mutually convenient one, certainly between Plugger and Lefebvre. But on other scores, that possibly won't be the case. Obviously, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about Primoz Roglic, and he's been linked to various other teams. I saw, Rob, that Richard Plugger met Tim Cook of Apple this week, and there have been some memes and some jokes to the effect of, you know, maybe they'll become the I team, the I Jumbo next year. But as far as Primoz Roglic is concerned, it might be that I might go and sign for Little Trek now. You know what I mean? We are enjoying. But I, you know, again, sort of trying to assess over the last few hours, last 2 or 3 days, what this all means for Primoz Roglic. I think what is certain, I can say confidently, is that Primoz Roglic, like everyone else, like all of the other riders, has been a little bit blindsided by this, or would be blindsided if it did happen. I don't think he has any great say, or Jonas Vingegaard has any great say in whether this, well, they don't have any say in whether this happens or not, and they're as surprised as anyone else. Would Remco Evenepoel want to ride for Jumbo-Visma, quite simply, or would he prefer to ride for Ineos Grenadiers? That's a whole other question, what's happening at Ineos Grenadiers. You know, even in the last couple of days, again, tried to get a bit of clarity about exactly what they're doing as far as contract renewals are concerned, and these rumours about other mergers that they may be involved in. I'm getting slightly confusing noises from there as well. There's stuff definitely going on, I think, at Ineos Grenadiers. There might be another bombshell like the one we had at the weekend regarding Ineos Grenadiers.
There's plenty going on at Ineos Grenadiers, I think, isn't it? And I think we can deduce that from just the attitude of, I think, all of us as fans towards Ineos Grenadiers and the sport in the last 18 months, 2 years. Just as lining up commentating, you know, the amount of grand tours that you go to, and you're used to it for a decade of going through the favourites in the first few stages. And this year in the grand tours, we haven't really turned up and thought, you know, they've got one of the massive, massive, massive favourites to win this race. You've been looking elsewhere, and with a team with that budget and their resources, something's not gone quite right there, has it? You know, you could maybe put the Giro d'Italia as an exception to that. Of course, Geraint Thomas put in one of the performances of his career, and it turned out to be a wonderful performance. Teo Gegenhardt was going well, wasn't he, leading up to the Giro d'Italia? But going to the Tour, going to the Vuelta, were they honestly in most people's thoughts to be on the podium, let alone win the thing? I'm not sure they were, to be honest. Certainly neutral observers. So something's not quite going right there. And then the biggest indicator is you get to July, 1st of August, and you're waiting for the transfer announcements, aren't you? First of all, during the tour, and you know this, certainly you're in your role on the ground, of your ear very much to the ground, Daniel, during the tour nowadays as well. I'm sure you weren't hearing too much about who was signing. When 1st of August came, we didn't get any transfer announcements. September's come and gone, the Vuelta's finished. No talk really about what's happening with Ineos Grenadiers, and I think that's rather strange for a team with so many spots on their roster for next year. So whether, I mean, I don't quite know what it is that's cooking up in the background, but something is.
Yeah, I mean, heard not so much about moves and transfers and commitments to sign riders, but a little bit about U-turns, what agents thought were commitments to sign riders suddenly being withdrawn. Going back to Jumbo-Visma, Rob, the sponsorship situation, you touched on it, or the financials. I think, you know, one of the most striking, shocking, bracing things about a story like this is that this is a team, as I've said many times in this podcast already, this is a team that has reached a pinnacle in terms of sporting performance, which we've rarely have ever seen in the sport. And one would think that there has never been a team more appealing to prospective sponsors. However, we know, you know, Jumbo, the Jumbo company, which is privately owned by a Dutch family, there are some sort of specific, curious, exceptional circumstances that have, well, befallen that family in the last couple of years. The founder of Jumbo Supermarkets died at the end of last year. There's been some other sort of drama in the family. I don't know enough about, you know, the financials of that company to talk to that, but it could be that these exceptional circumstances have influenced their decision. I'm sure they have, in fact. There have been other issues with sponsors, with Jumbo-Visma sub-sponsors. The Gorillas, the German delivery company, there was a story in June about a budget shortfall at Jumbo-Visma because Gorillas hadn't honoured their sponsorship arrears up until that point. Gorillas have been in the German press all summer about, well, the problems they've been facing, suppliers' delays, debt that they may have with various suppliers. So, you know, that's all slightly opaque as well. Raymond mentioned the other sub-sponsors at Jumbo-Visma, Hamer, Unilever, so on and so forth, which he sort of suggested had been recruited by Jumbo. And if all of this is true, then it doesn't leave an awful lot on the table. Rob, what we thought might happen nonetheless was that in the coming weeks, coming months, at some point, Richard Plugger would announce that his search for a new sponsor had been successful, again, given the team's success. In fact, I think it's probably worth at this point replaying a conversation that I and a few other reporters had with him in the last week of the Vuelta about precisely that. Now, bear in mind, hold that in mind, the timing of that conversation. Midway through the last week of the Vuelta, this is what he said about his search for a sponsor at that point.
No, we are here to stay, and you know, we have a plan until 2030, and no worries. We will be here, and we will try to maintain this this position. However, we have other teams who will fight it, of course. But no worries on that side. We will go further. We have a good plan, and you know, we want to, yeah, like I said, we want to move on and be bigger, maybe even, or be stronger. But it's a long-term strategy we have here. Sponsors are welcome. So if a sponsor would like to join us, well, please be welcome. And I think especially the American market is also at the moment very interested. You know, we have some in place, and there's no, how do you say that? No worries.
But no new replacement for Jumba as of now.
I will tell you when we know it.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast for the past 7 seasons. They are world leaders in sports nutrition, and their energy drinks and fuel are used by the very best in the World Tour, including our record breakers and Grand Tour winners, right down to the likes of me. Although I should probably clarify, I'm not in the World Tour, but I am someone who wants to avoid the dreaded empty feeling mid-ride and know that they're staying well-fueled and hydrated without having to eat loads. Science in Sport have just the product for you. It's the Beta Fuel, which was really a game changer when it came along 5 years ago. And recently, they've tweaked the recipe, meaning that carbohydrate can be delivered in larger quantities and more efficiently than ever before. They've tested it on athletes recently, a study in which they fed athletes 120 grams of Beta Fuel an hour, which is 30 grams more than the previously recommended amount. And what they found was that even after 3 hours of sustained effort, half of the energy used was from Science in Sport Beta Fuel rather than from the body's own fuel stores. Athletes were using 1.5 grams of carbohydrate per minute, some of the highest rates of carbohydrate oxidation ever reported, and crucially, they had no upset stomach. They were able to sustain high performance intensity with lower perceived effort, which, after all, is what we're all looking for, isn't it? You can read all about this on the website, scienceinsport.com, and shop the whole range of Science in Sport products. They have everything for before, during, and after your ride. So go to scienceinsport.com.
It was interesting him there mentioning the United States. I don't know whether that was simply because Sepp Kuss was sort of zeroing in on Vuelta a España victory, and I don't know whether it was mainly a sort of a siren call to any prospective US sponsors. I don't know whether he was anticipating his meeting with Tim Cook, but I don't know. It's always very difficult to read between the lines of some of these interviews that, well, whether it's riders or team bosses give, they obviously, it's not in their interest to be completely transparent, and I suppose he wasn't being completely transparent there. Midway through the last week of the Vuelta, that was certainly, if we look at the timeline given to us by Raymond, and that's been reported this week, that was certainly a point at which these conversations with Patrick Lefebvre had started, and were well on their way.
Yeah, it could have even been a case of, you know, the sort of comedy, oh, look over there and I'm going to run over here sort of thing, couldn't it? A smokescreen. Who knows? But, you know, there might be something in the US link, and maybe, you know, it's only prudent to look at several possibilities, isn't it? You know, why would you put all your eggs in one basket when nothing is certain at the minute? But listening to Raymond, as you were saying, when you hear about the finances, when you learn that Jumbo bought all of those different sponsors on board, then you suddenly start to really believe in the story. Again, I said, I think most of us started this week with quite a bit of skepticism when we saw the news, like, ah, really? Come on. Never. Can't happen. But when you listen to those considered opinions and the real reasoning behind it, it does start to make a lot of sense, certainly in this sort of age of globalization where, you know, even think of how many teams there are in the Benelux at that level as well, fighting for local sponsors. I know Jumbo said they're looking elsewhere and looking all over, but, you know, in this age of global economic downturn and globalization in cycling, where you've got teams coming from all sorts of different parts of the world now, are there not too many teams for the market in Benelux? I know it's a different market because it's the cycling homeland, and it's not necessarily my opinion, this, but it's something maybe that we should consider. But again, market forces and money is going to overrule anything that people just want to do. You know, we can all sit down and have a fantasy team, so this is how we'd like to have, these are the rides. But reality hits you in the face, doesn't it?
And the present reality, Rob, the elephant in the room, but not so much elephant in the room because it's something that people are talking about and have acknowledged, is the influence of, well, Gulf states oligarchs, this sort of new model that we've seen emerge in the last 10, 15 years in professional cycling, and it's certainly not exclusive
sport.
It's not exclusive to professional cycling. This applies to other sports. It's interesting, in a week when the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, MBS, gave an interview in which he said he didn't really care if Saudi Arabia's investment in sport was seen as greenwashing or called greenwashing. They were going to continue with it. It's interesting that this story breaks then, because one of the sort of unspoken, certainly by Richard Plugger and Patrick Lefevre until now, motivations for this merger could be the threat of, or the difficulty of, competing with forces like, for example, the UAE team. They're not the only team in professional cycling funded by an oligarch or a nation state, in their case. And the only way to compete is to do, well, the unthinkable, and join or fuse two other major superpowers that whose funding until now has been more traditional. And you know, certainly the way Patrick Lefevre has gone about looking for sponsors, gone about recruiting sponsors, keeping sponsors, has been quite, I suppose, in inverted commas, old school.
Yeah, I mean, where do you start with this? This is a minefield, isn't it, Daniel? And one that I'm sure that we'll talk about as this story develops over the next few weeks and months. And it's something, as you said, that's been around in professional sport the last 10, 15 years. There's all sorts of different views and different different ways, you know, directions in which you can approach this. There's, you know, people say, oh, hang on a minute, is this not just the rest of the world coming in? But there are different economic conditions, aren't there? You know, there are different economic conditions, Daniel, even within the more traditional states. And people from outside the traditional states around the world might actually say, oh, hang on a minute, you know, you Europeans don't have the monopoly on being able to have cycling teams. You know, that's one other way we could look at it. But in terms of economics, let's say we've got a Dutch team, a Belgian team, a British team, and a team from somewhere else. In each of those countries, a section of your budget is going to be very different, what you spend on national insurance, how you employ people, economic and company law in those countries, what you have to might do to publish your accounts, what you have to pay to. There's all sorts of different laws within different countries. So that already makes it very, very difficult to say that everyone's on a completely level playing field anyway. But yes, I agree that the Gulf states in particular are changing the playing field and making it much more difficult. I mean, whatever your view on that is, the facts are there. You can't deny that that is a difference, isn't it? So I can understand why they're looking for different ways to compete. And, you know, there's a school of thought, as you alluded to there, Daniel, that they might have been forced into this once the money runs out from the traditional sponsor.
Yeah, and it's almost ironic in a way that a week or two after Vuelta a España, which saw people calling again for a salary cap, and for a salary cap to be applied to teams like Jumbo-Visma. Again, Jumbo-Visma, who a team whose sponsorship model is more traditional, that the same team is now possibly resorting to this kind of desperate measure in an effort to compete with, as we said, other forces who have completely different models. I mean, that, zooming out again a bit more and looking at things in a kind of a more macro sense, if this merger does happen and we are told that this is essentially the reason why it had to happen in the view of Richard Plugger and Patrick Lefevre to compete with the likes of UAE, the salary cap conversation will probably possibly come to the fore again. And I think this is something that American, USA-based sort of watchers, commentators, fans, sport are much more familiar with, obviously, because it's something that applies in their sports. It can, to a European, it can look very appealing in a lot of ways. And sometimes it's quite difficult to see the downsides of that. It does have downsides. It has downsides in the same way that all kind of closed shop type sporting leagues, for example, Formula One and the American leagues, NFL, and they have downsides as well. But it is a conversation that I think people will have more and more over the next few years.
People will have it. I mean,
it's not gonna happen, is it?
No, I sit from a... I've never been into these sort of American closed shop leagues. I really struggle to become emotionally invested in it. It's not to say that on the other hand I'm emotionally invested in a supermarket sponsor or anything like that. I just don't think it's necessarily the solution to the problem we have. And I know there are people, you know, team owners, certain team owners who are very vocal about this, who really, really put their weight behind this idea. But
let's face it, Rob, if we were talking about supermarkets, let's take supermarkets as we're talking about Jumbo. And we were talking about a supermarket, which, let's say, how much market share in terms of big bike races in the world has Jumbo Visma had this year? They've probably had 60%. Soudal Quickstep might have had 10%. This probably is a merger, would be a merger that wouldn't pass antitrust.
The Competition Commission.
No,
yeah.
In the UK and in other countries, would it?
And certainly within the European Union as well, where there are very, very strict laws about that sort of thing. Yeah, it's different. Sport is different. And, you know, again, I don't profess to really have any answers, but I know and I get the feeling that closing the shop, protectionism, isn't the answer. It just doesn't feel right. And I think if you're trying to get people to become emotionally involved with something, it's not the way. There has to be some sort of story. And there has to be a way for somebody, the little person, for you and I to start a cycling podcast team and have that dream of one day becoming a world team. You know, what used to be called a world tour team. Well, you know, it's like picking a fantasy team. And of course, you know, we're laughing about it now, but that's essentially the job that's going to happen if this merger happens, isn't it? Because we've talked about why it's happening, you know, possibly, and, you know, the probability. It seems now, when you listen to the people and Raymond and people involved close to the story, what happens now in practical terms, Daniel? Because you've got that first thing up on high. Let's talk about the ride. It's going to be like picking a fantasy team, isn't it? But with the difference that, you know, you're not picking up the newspaper on a Saturday and saying, oh, that's £1 million for Alan Shearer, that's another £5 million for so-and-so, so-and-so, oh, I've only got £20 million to spend. This is about getting people, humans, winning cultures to continue, everybody to join in real life and to get on. It's such a difficult job to be done in practice. Obviously, on paper, we can all sit there and say, oh, well, of course, you know, people like Lampard and Askren, they're going to be first names on the team sheet when it comes to the classics to support, you know, Wout van Aert and people like that next year. Who knows? You know, and you can pick up any name. Who knows what's going to happen with that and how it, what happens behind the scenes. So keeping that winning culture, a lot of changes on and off the bike. And then the knock-on effect as well, Daniel. There are currently 18 of these world teams, which is what the UCI in their infinite wisdom seems to have called what we, I think, still in our heads have world tour teams. So, you know, who's going to take world team status? Because there would then be 17, and supposedly it's an 18-team league, isn't it, the world tour at the minute. And so somebody's going to be, it's not a year of promotion. You know, we were just joking and talking about, you know, having that need to be able to grow, and if you're a small team, have the ambition to be in a league, not for it not to be a closed shop. But the next promotion and relegation isn't for another two seasons' time, isn't it? So, you know, what would that mean? You'd have a pro team. Go on.
I had a text, Rob, on Sunday night from UnoX's CEO, Jens Haugland. He said, I'll take the Norwegians. If they want to get rid of some Norwegians, there are a couple of very promising Norwegians at Jumbo-Visma. And yeah, he will gladly welcome them. But yeah, they're a team, aren't they? And he said that they only want to step up if they fulfill the sporting criteria and there are other teams ahead of them in the line, but they're certainly interested.
Yeah, so a pro team would likely move to the World Tour. So, you know, again, how does that happen? Normally, as you just alluded to, it's going to be on sporting merit. And that was the idea, wasn't it, when promotion relegation was brought in every three seasons, which is still something that's a bit difficult to get our heads around. But at least, you know, we've gone half the step to getting it. But that's not due to be another two seasons. Who takes it? And then, you know, if a team is given it by the UCI that another team on sporting merit doesn't feel they're there, can they then challenge that? It just opens up another lot of questions and doubts for the winter, doesn't it?
What do you think we're going to be faced with on January the 1st? What do you think is going to happen? I'll go first. I think Primoz Roglic is going to leave. I didn't think that until a few days ago, but with these very strong rumours, a situation that looks as though, as I say, it's going to come to fruition. I think Roglic will leave. I think it creates a perfect opportunity for him to leave. You know, I've been speaking to a few agents and they were talking about the contractual intricacies of such a merger as well. Some of the contracts might have to be redrawn redacted in some cases. And rewritten, and that could create the latitude for some riders who had been very much tied down to get out of their current arrangements. I don't know what's going to happen with Remco Evenepoel. Part of me thinks it's one of them. Roglic or Remco might well end up at Ineos. The whole prospect is so mind-blowing that it is I really struggle to envisage a situation where 15 riders, 20 riders who are formerly at Sudal Quickstep or Jumbo-Visma are in October, and we're almost in October, trying to find deals elsewhere.
I agree on the Primož Roglič front completely. I think, to be honest, that was perhaps on the way to happening even if the merger hadn't happened at it. And I think we've come to a stage, if you add Remco Evenepoel into the mix, where next year, in the sort of calendar of people wanting to go to different races and do things, everybody wants to do the Tour, Daniel. Everybody needs to do the Tour. Roglič, he's won more Welters than we can shake a stick at. He's got his Giro. He wants to be the leader of the Tour. And the clock on his career is ticking at a faster rate than on Vingegaard and on Evenepoel's career. You could say, okay, Vingegaard, why not go and have a go at the Giro next year? Something like that. I just can't see it at the minute. When you're on that winning streak and when you're on that run in the Tour de France, it's difficult to walk away from it, isn't it? So I can't see that really changing. He also is going to be the man with first dibs, I think, on everything, and probably quite rightly so. He's just come off winning two Tours de France, and he was very strong, wasn't he, in the Vuelta a España, despite not really having prepared for it as he would have liked to have prepared for a Grand Tour. And Remco Evenepoel has to do the Tour de France next year. He's talked about it for so long. Those who advise him want him to do the Tour de France next year. I cannot see him, however, starting in a team where there's a real threat to his leadership. Yes, then he might want to ride with somebody like a Sepp Kuss. I mean, he was already bringing a Mikel Landa, wasn't he, into Sudal Quickstep. You know, it's another one. We won't go to it now, but what happens with that contract and where does that go? But I cannot see Remco Evenepoel in the same team as Jonas Vingegaard. I really struggle with that. Not because they don't like each other, they might be best of mates off the bike, just because their sporting objectives are going to clash massively next year. It could be that this merger happens, or this absorption of another team, one team by another, happens, and all of our original fears, oh, this is shocking for the sport, blah, 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 blah. And I'm, you know, when I first saw the news, I was in that camp. But maybe we won't have all the big names on the same roster. I just cannot see it happening and everybody being content. So perhaps on that front, we might get the merger. But luckily, as fans, we might see a few of the big actors and big names separated and distributed into different teams.
Sepp Kuss and Mikel Landa leading the Wolfpack of the Tour of Flanders. You heard it here first. What happens to the Wolfpack? The Wolfpack have been eaten by the bumblebees. Rob, I think we've just about exhausted the subject for now. I'm sure there'll be more developments in the next few days. In the meantime, I'm going to thank you and say we will be back next week. And Lionel will be back, I'm pretty sure.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.